Okay, you want to lead? Okay.
Sashi.
Puki chikshing me tok chom. Rira bling shin yin de gim padi. Sangye shing du ek te uwargi. Drogun amdak shing la chupar shom. Idam guru radha mandala kam niryatayami.
Sangye
chudang soki choknam la. Jangchu vardu dakni kapsu chi. Daki chenyengi pe sunam ki. Drola penchir sangye chupar shom. Chudang soki choknam la jangchu vardu dakni kapsu chi daki chenyengi pe sunam ki jola penchir sangye chupar shum
sangye
chudang soki choknam la jangchu vardu dakni kyapsu chi daki chenyengi pe sunam ki jola penchir sangye chupashu. So we'll start with the meditation. Sitting up nice and tall. And just letting all the thoughts float away. We grab them and keep them here, but really their lifespan on their own is very short. Come into just the physical form. Start scanning from the crown of your head down. Take your time, each place you come to, letting go. Releasing tension, releasing holding, releasing grasping or pushing away. Staying only with the physical form. once you've scanned all the way down the body, start to scan back up just as slowly, pausing anywhere that it feels like extra attention is needed, and lingering in that place, letting go of holding there, letting go of stress, anxiety. Then find the rhythm of your breath. Place your awareness there. And in a way, rest there. Not so that there's a drowsy feeling or heaviness, but resting there as in keeping the gaze there without contracting or holding too tightly. And you can feel the breath at the heart as the lungs rise and fall, or at the tip of the nose, feeling the warmth of the exhale and the cool air of the inhale. back to your breath really brightly for the last few moments. And expand your awareness, filling your whole body. And reaching out to the feelings and sounds, the solidity of your seat. The lightness. Start to move and open your eyes when you're ready. And make a dedication of your heart's deepest longing. Etiquette. One thing with any teacher, in theory, is standing when they stand and sitting when they sit. It's not always taught or followed in every sangha, but you'll notice that people who know will do that. Some days it just will not go straight, and then sometimes you just do a little bit and it's decent. All right. So we're on class 10. Very exciting. All right, so we're on class 10 of Karma, Creating Your Future. Does that need to be crisper? Does it need to be more crisp?
No, looks fine.
Okay. So the end of the chapter on Karma and Abhidharma talks about the perfections and the Bodhisattva. So if anyone asks if Hinayana or a lower school's idea, or you can call foundational school, talks about things like the Bodhisattva, you can say yes. It's not quite the same as in Mahayana, but it is there. So we don't have time to talk about all the perfections, but we will talk about the first good deed. So what you need to know is the karma involved in the perfections. How to make it a really good deed. So the six perfections, do you know what they are? Okay, the first one is giving, which is what we're going to focus on tonight. And we'll study these down the road more too. So the first one's giving. The second is ethics. Or morality. The third is patience, which is mostly not getting angry when the time comes to get angry. Like when that one thing happens, that really pisses us off, we don't get angry at that point. That's what this patience is referring to. And then the fourth one is joyous effort. Taking joy in doing good things. The fifth is concentration, or sometimes called meditation. And the sixth is wisdom. So this is a really important class because it's how to make our deeds that we do, the good karma, really, really strong. And that's a good thing to know because after learning about karma, how it works, all the different components that we've learned through these 10 weeks, then we're armed with all of this information and we want to know how to use it to make it powerful. Because ultimately, we're planting seeds to see ourselves as a Buddha, planting seeds for our future enlightenment. And so we want to know how to do that in the best way. We don't have so much time. We don't want to take the long way around. We want to get directly there, cut through it all, and do the most powerful deeds. So that's what we'll talk about tonight. And we'll start out with Jinpa. Say Jinpa.
Jinpa.
Jinpa. And Jinpa is giving. We're going to talk about the four kinds of giving. I love all these. And the first one, say Dakki.
Dakki.
Dunchir.
Dunchir.
Dakki
Dunchir.
Shen Dunchir.
Shen Dunchir.
Shen Dunchir.
Shen Dunchir.
And then Ni Ke.
Ni Ke.
Dunchir.
Dunchir.
And then Ni Ke Minchir.
Ni Ke Minchir.
Yep. All right, so the first one is for the benefit of me. So, as far as giving, we can give different types of things. We can give protection to people. We can give dharma. We can give love. Usually we think of material things, but those are also the different kinds of generosity. So the Abhidharma talks about the different kinds of giving. Say the duck. Ki Dunchir and Shen Dunchir. So the first type, what we're talking about here, is giving for your own benefit. And examples of this type of giving in the Abhidharma are giving to inanimate objects, a temple, for example. There's no benefit to the recipient. It's only a benefit to the giver. There's nobody else there that's going to get anything out of it, basically. And when we get up to the higher offerings and we're offering to enlightened beings, it's basically for our own benefit because they don't need anything at all. So this type of giving results in the desire realm, samsara. And there's two types of people that do this. Those who aren't free from desire for the desire realm, or those in deep meditation who are free of the desire realm. The first Dalai Lama defines the desire realm as the two desires, basically for food and sex. And the main objects in this those are the main objects in this realm that we're interested in. Food really probably consumes my mind most of the time.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, when I think about people I know, I can see the tendency of either food or sex. Like, there's a dominant one for me. I mean, I just think about food all the time. Even when I'm eating, I'm talking about food. Or thinking about what my next meal is going to be. And partly is because I'm, like, planning in my mind. But, yeah, I can see how that's the dominant desire. So two ways to get rid of this desire is to see selflessness, which is emptiness, what they call emptiness in the school that we're in. And the second one is that you get into more and more deep meditations. And at that point, you've lost the gross desire, but there is still some desire there. So that one wouldn't be permanent. The person who's doing this kind of giving is either doing it for themselves or the one who's gone into deep meditation. So they're giving and will get a karmic result that will have a low benefit. So the mind state of this kind of person doing this kind of giving isn't very high, and it will result in some small good thing, but it'll be some small good thing that's going to wear out in samsara. Deep meditation on its own will mostly always fail because we just come back down after we come out. Okay, and then the second one, Shenden cheer, is Shen is other, Dun is for, cheer is benefit. So the second kind is giving for the benefit of others. There's no benefit to the giver. You're doing it only to help others and not yourself. Aryas who have seen emptiness directly, they do this kind of giving. When those who have seen selflessness or emptiness give to ordinary people, that would be this kind of giving. So they don't wish for a result in the desire realm. They have no desire for the desire realm anymore. So the other person is getting some food or some flowers, so they're getting the benefit. The other person gets the benefit. So, there are two parts of the good deed. They give you pleasure in the short term, and in the long term, they give you nirvana or Buddhahood, if done with the highest motivation. So there are Aryas who do have desire for the desire realm, but there are two things for sure that come out of seeing emptiness directly. The first one is you lose any doubt in the Buddha's teachings. No doubt at all. You know completely all of them are true. That's the one. And then the other is you experience the Four Noble Truths. You see directly that life is suffering. There's a cause. There's an end to the suffering, and there's a path to the end. Which in and of itself would be extremely comforting to know that directly for sure. To know for sure there is an end to the suffering. Like I think that there is, based on the things that I know. I really think there is. But there's not like this deep conviction when you've seen it yourself. And that would be really comforting to have, to know that. And you would know that not only if there was an end for yourself, there would be an end for everyone too. I think that one sounds pretty amazing. So, okay, losing any doubt in the Buddhist teachings is seeing the Four Noble Truths. I think I separated them. And then the second one is the intellectual belief in self-existence. You no longer have that. You still see things as self-existent, but you know that they are not. You've seen exactly how the world works. So at that point, we'd be an arhat who's destroyed the mental bakchaks, or the seeds, to see things as self-existent. And the arya has seen emptiness directly, but has not gotten rid of the mental bakchaks. When they do get rid of the bakchaks, they're at least in nirvana, maybe a Buddha, if they have bodhicitta. So the mental bakchaks are those seeds that are waiting to ripen, that are waiting to pop up. So what this is saying, the difference between an arhat and an arya, I always get this confused. An arhat's destroyed those mental bakchaks, and arya has not. Both of them have seen emptiness directly, though. Okay. And then the third one, nike dunchir, is it benefits both self and others. An example of this is a realized being who is not yet free of desire presents something to another being who is not yet free of desire either. So the first is for the benefit of me, the second is the benefit of other, the third is the benefit of both. And then the fourth, nike minchir, is neither benefit by giving. This would be a Buddha giving to another Buddha to honor them. So there's one kind of giving where you're trying to help someone, and then there's another kind of giving where you're trying to honor someone. And it can be a really deep subject when you're giving. Why are you really giving? So if we understand karma, this is exciting to think about. To think that the intention that we bring to something is what makes it powerful. Because that's something that we're capable of doing a lot of the time if we practice. So it's possible, if we had a class on karma and we understood how to make things occur, it is possible we could take that and just become really rich and become more entrenched in the desire realm. The knowledge of karma and how it works on its own could lead to that. But as we know, we would still be in the suffering realm. This kind of stuck with me when Geshe Michael said this in class. He said, rich people think they deserve the wealth and don't do things to support it. And then poor people do negative deeds to try and get enough. So there's problems on both sides. So, how do we make our giving more powerful? If we're into Buddhism a lot, we want to know the shortest way, because we can't do everything we're taught. There's just not enough time. There's too many things. We're going to go over the most powerful kinds of giving now. So, how to understand the most powerful giving to bring the best karmic results. We're going to talk about 7 qualities of the giver that make the karmic result more powerful. So any little thing that we give, we can make it the most powerful. So we're talking about the giver, not the person we're giving to or what we're giving. We're talking about the giver. And we don't usually think about that. So say pakpe nor done.
Pakpe nor done.
Okay, so Pakpay is Arya, Noor is riches, and Dun is seven kinds. The first one is Dipa. Sultram. Which is Geshe Sultram. Morality. Tongwa. Tupa. Notsa Shepa. Trelyup. And Sherab. Okay, so those are the seven. The seven riches of the Aryas. The best way to be when giving. So do you remember what the Aryas are? We just mentioned the difference between the Arhat and the Arya.
So it's someone who has seen emptiness but has not destroyed all of the negative karmic seeds.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Good. So the best way to be when giving, to increase the power of the deed, that's what these are all talking about. Having these qualities when we're giving vastly increases the karmic power. So we don't have, and we don't have to be an Arya to practice these, which is good news for me, at least. In the window of opportunity of wealth and health and intelligence, how do we make our giving as powerful as possible? We have this small window when we can practice, even just the small amount of time during the day that we can carve out. So the first one, faith, is concentrate on good qualities and want to become like that yourself. So understanding the good qualities of holy beings or goodness in general, admiring those qualities, feeling joy and happiness about them being there and wishing to be like them. So His Holiness the Dalai Lama is a good example. Basically, his whole job is teaching and helping people and trying to enlighten the world in whatever way possible. So thinking of all those good qualities that he has. So we can have depa, or faith, about the good quality of anyone, even if the person isn't generally a great person, but they do have good qualities. And then the second one, morality, avoiding the 10 bad deeds. If we have morality when we're giving, the karma of giving is more powerful. Okay. This is a really nice way to go around in our life. Just getting to the point where we like everybody around us so much. Everyone that we see, we're like a mother who only notices the good qualities in people. And when we're among normal people all day long, we just take joy and appreciation in their good qualities. Or in our job, or our life, or whoever's around us, even in the newspaper, online, on TV, just taking joy in others' good qualities all the time. In the highest secret teachings, this is very important. And it's some sort of blessing where you concentrate on the good stuff and don't concentrate on the bad. It's really easy to get stuck in the bad. It's so sticky. And I find it's a difficult balance because I'm really conscious of not wanting to push away or push down the feelings that are just going to pop back up in some other way. But then at the same time, to not let them take over everything and to keep that positivity going. Which in the moment, it just feels so much nicer too, the positive thoughts. And starting to focus on the positive, we start out artificially. And then after a while of faking it, it becomes our reality. And sometimes, I think this is an obstacle to practice. I see it myself and I see it in others. Sometimes we don't want to start because it doesn't feel natural. But the only way to get to the point where it feels natural is by starting and practicing. We're basically just sabotaging our practice by, you know, like, Geshe Michael calls it a diamond deal, where you're giving someone a choice between two bad options. Like, you can either have this diamond that's really small, or this big one that's really flawed, or this small one that's chipped, or, you know, whatever, but it's, you're kind of boxing yourself in your practice in this way where each choice that you're giving yourself is a bad choice and it's not going to lead where we want. Okay. So as far as the giving aspect of it, to not be stingy, be very generous. Don't give from the leftovers, give from the main pool of resources. I like this one because, like, when giving to the homeless or any sort of donation, I do kind of do it that way. I kind of see, I pay my bills and everything, which is a good practice to do anyways, but then I think, okay, what else do I have coming up this month that I need or just want money for? And then the leftover I have will maybe go for some donation. So it's kind of a nice practice, even because if I'm going to donate anyways, to just start out and take it out in the beginning and then feel like, because this is saying it makes it more powerful, taking from the main pool. So starting out that way instead of at the end. Because either way, I'm going to be giving anyways. So if it's more powerful to see myself giving from like the main chunk,
and to become
might
more
as well
from
do it that
place
way.
A place of generosity than a place of fear of lack.
Yeah.
Because you're waiting until you know that you've paid everything, it's you're still in that fear of that you're going to lack.
Yep. Yeah, totally. And then I think what that plants the seeds for is feeling like we don't have enough in the future, too. Which is the sadness of getting stuck in samsara over and over. Yeah, so. And then the next one, okay, the next one is learning. And this is talking about classroom hours of learning. So basically all of these things, which some of them boil down to just doing our practice, the classroom hours of learning, just so that we understand and know what we're doing. If we give without awareness of what we're doing, it has little benefit. We have to understand the mechanics of what's going on with the giving, the selflessness of the giver, the emptiness of the giver. Of the giving and the gift, as well as how karma works. So next course, we'll learn about the emptiness. And it's said that we need thousands of hours of classroom time. Just over and over, soaking our mind in the teachings, because everywhere we go is non-dharma, in a sense. There is a point in our practice where everything starts to look like dharma, but my experience is that comes about through the hours of soaking in the classroom. And then we can start to turn around like this deep habit of seeing things in the wrong way. So we just have to become very well educated and it has to sink in. And that's why these in-depth courses are really great too. Because we're really soaking our minds in all of this information, even if, like, not all of it's sticking because there's just too much of it, but it is doing something. It's not sticking in the way that we can maybe rattle it off the top of our head all the time, but it is going in some level in some way. So it's still making a big difference whether we think on a conscious level that it is or not. And then each time we hear the teachings over and over, it just soaks in deeper and deeper. So we have to go as and listen as much as we can, like listening to teachings when we're driving, cleaning the house, or, you know, making our bed in the morning, cooking, that sort of thing, just whenever we can, without overdoing it, being balanced. And this affects our giving because we know why we're giving. So we're just talking about giving, but this we can apply to all the six perfections that we mentioned in the beginning. So we're generous now in our lives because we have some bok chok from the past. And insofar as we don't understand the emptiness of the three, it isn't very powerful, the giving. So the emptiness of the three is the emptiness of the giver, the giving, and the gift. That's the emptiness of the three. We need learning to study that. So we have to have an idea of what emptiness is in our mind, and that's what we're going to study in the next course. There's this story where Jetsongkhapa is sitting at a table with Umapa, and Umapa can see Manjushri, who's an enlightened being. And Jetsongkhapa is dying to ask Manjushri questions. And Umapa says, okay, what would you like me to ask Manjushri for you? Jetsongkhapa says, ask him if I have a good understanding of emptiness. And Manjushri says, nope. Then Jetsongkhapa says, okay, ask him if I'm headed more towards South Tantrika school or Madhyamika school. And Manjushri says, neither one. And Jetsongkhapa is in his early 30s at this time. And he is an incredibly well-read, educated, realized master at this point. So the view we have of emptiness now, whatever perception we have to use it but refine it. The point is that Jetsongkhapa has already studied so much, and Manjushri is judging his knowledge as not so high. So we need to study a lot. Boils down to that. Okay, and then Notsa Shepa. We had this before. It's one of the reasons we avoid a bad deed. I don't know if you were here for this. Do you remember? I don't remember exactly.
It sounds familiar. I'm not sure if it was because I was in the class or because I read it in the notes. I did make up.
So it's one of the reasons. Okay, basically, like.
So having the regret, is that part of it?
In a way, okay. We're avoiding a bad deed because we're embarrassed for anyone else to see it. So normally, I might eat a whole bag of Barbara's cheese crunchies. But if I have people over at my house, I'd be too embarrassed to eat the whole bag in front of them. So I'm avoiding that deed out of embarrassment or because I would lose face. And at work, too, even though everyone else eats really crappy, too. Well, not everyone. A lot of people. I'm embarrassed to get a bag of Doritos and be seen walking with the bag of Doritos. So, and that's saving me because they have so many different ingredients and they're so high calorie, and so it's helping me avoid doing that deed. So we don't do bad deeds for reasons relating to ourself. No one would know if we did a bad deed. Oh, so this one's actually talking more about ourself. So we don't do bad deeds because we're embarrassed to lose face in front of ourselves. And then the second, that is the other kind, but that's not what we're talking about here. I was thinking of the wrong example. So no one would know if we did the bad deed, but we don't do it for our own conscience' sake. our own conscience. Which could be the same thing. Like, maybe no one would even notice that I'm carrying the bag of Doritos, but I'm just embarrassed to do it, so I don't do it. Or I don't want to be thought, I don't want to think of myself as the type of person that eats fast food, so I don't eat it. That sort of thing. So if we have this quality in our personality when giving, it makes the karma more powerful. I don't quite get that. So I guess basically it's just the person who has the greater personal qualities, because we talked about morality before too, it creates the more powerful karma. So this being embarrassed to do something in front of ourselves is actually a good thing, because it's saving us from doing bad deeds. So maybe that's where this is going. I'm not sure I totally get that one, but that's what I'm thinking.
Because I'm seeing it when you say, you know, not going against our own conscience. It's kind of coming from, again, a place of integrity.
So, right.
So that when you do the giving from that place of integrity.
Yeah, it makes it more powerful. Yeah, I think that could be it. That makes sense. Yeah, it's just being a better person, because we're talking about faith, morality, giving generously, learning, having an embarrassment about not giving something, or like maybe donating online. Nobody's going to see us do it. People might not even notice the donation coming in. So we would just do it out of a sense of like wanting to see ourselves as that kind of person. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud, but I think that could fit there. So then what comes next is, we don't want to let other people down to have the appearance of doing a bad deed. This is more what I was talking about before. So, Trelyup, would this deed hurt other people? Would they lose faith in me or in the practice? Especially a monk needs to be careful of this. So there are times when there's a monk who's offering a mandala, which is like what we do at the beginning of class, kind of a gift or an offering to a teacher. And this is an actual mandala that's like piled up with rice and jewels and whatever else. And he was only doing it because his sponsor was going to be coming in. He was usually meditating so deeply that he wouldn't be using his physical body in that way. So this monk caught himself and then threw down the mandala. So this isn't saying that we avoid a good deed because other people may think it's wrong. If we're sure of our motivation, then we need to do it. And there are times like this, because when we're practicing on the Buddhist path, we're going against the grain of society. And the one that I've seen is people thinking that like I'm being walked all over or something because I don't try to get back at someone for something or stand up for myself in certain situations. Which isn't to say that we don't do that, but there's a way of doing it with a pure motivation, as opposed to like, they're not going to push me around. You know, that's more of a prideful, angry way of approaching the situation. And also, I think one that comes up a lot in our culture is lying. there is this idea that it's okay to lie about certain things. And granted, there are times. There's a story of the Buddha. No, I don't know. I don't think this was the Buddha. But there's a story where there's an... What is it? It's someone searching for this person because they want to kill them. And they go knocking on someone's door and ask them if they saw this person. And they say no. But they did see the person. The person's in their house. But they're saying no to save this person and to save the person asking from doing some terrible deed. So there are situations, but in general, there's an idea in our society that it's okay to lie to avoid hurting someone's feelings or something, and that doesn't add up karmically. Lying is a bad deed. Not hurting someone's feelings usually is a good thing. So if we're not hurting their feelings, it's because of something we did in the past. It's not from lying. Nothing good comes from doing something bad. So it's this twisted way that's thought of in our society a lot. Or that it's okay to lie about something because everybody else does.
Or even just exaggeration. I myself, it's like, in a way, it's just because you're making it a little bit more dramatic or whatever, it just, or it feels so big. And then I realize it's like, wait a second, that's not really true.
Yeah.
You know, it's not 20 miles, it's like maybe two. You know?
Yeah.
It's that sense of just...
Yeah, being very clear with our words. Yeah. And then there are times, too, like everything has this balance, but there are times where it might be helpful for someone to exaggerate in some way. But not just, but we would be consciously doing this and thinking about it as opposed to trying to make ourselves look better by telling this grand story or, you know, something like that.
Or to gain sympathy by making it seem bigger than it really was.
Right. Try to sway their opinion.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then the seventh way, Sherab, is wisdom. So these are the seven riches. The seventh is wisdom, understanding emptiness. So that is the seventh way to supercharge the karmic deed of giving. I think we'll take a break there. That's a good point. Yeah, and